Evening, coaches. Welcome to Daily Podcast, Daily Sports Sense Podcast, Locker Room Podcast. Familiar faces again tonight. Danny St. Ledger, Ryan Jones. Great to have you on, lads. I don't know if yous are fully fresh tonight after St. Patrick's weekend there, Daniel. Any pints of Guinness over the weekend?
One or two quiet on Saturday, but they're very quiet. We've six in the morning starts here at the moment, so not ideal with a hangover and a 2 year old, you know.
Well, I was going to say you're not up training at 6 o'clock anyway, Daniel.
Oh, absolutely not.
Ryan, any festivities over the weekend? Any?
I was down in Port Stewart, so I had a few, yeah, but nothing
good
too
man.
Mental.
Good man, good man, good man. Well, lads, listen, I suppose, like, you know, it's been an interesting weekend of results. I think a few of the divisions are sort of really, really taking shape now. You know, obviously, Division 2, the league finals already decided. It's Armagh Donegal. I think that's something that we probably predicted, you know, from day one. But I suppose, Ryan, the standout result in Division 2 was certainly Louth 6-17 and 0-11 went over Fermanagh. Like, a 24-point defeat at senior inter-county level is quite damning, isn't it? Like, I know it's probably difficult for you to chat about Fermanagh, you know, having spent so much time with the boys in the squad and stuff, but that's a very unfamiliar Fermanagh result, Ryan. Like, any word of what went wrong or what happened? Or
I suppose, being honest, at senior level in any division, you know, that margin of victory, you'd be looking at it and going, yeah, what happened? Did Fermanagh throw in the towel? And I know the Fermanagh boys definitely wouldn't have. Now, I wasn't at the game. I've seen bits and pieces, and look, Lough just seemed to catch Fermanagh a lot in the counter-attack.
Right, okay.
Fermanagh play a game where they get the kick out away short, and they send a lot of bodies up the pitch, and especially their defenders kind of stretch the playing, fill the shape. But Louth obviously had identified this, you know, watching Fermanagh closely in the first five or six league games that they played, and they just turned them over. And then on the counter attack, in fairness, Louth were lethal. They went for goals, and obviously, you know, the likes of Sam Mulroy there, brilliant finishers. Yeah. There's a boy Downey playing midfield, chipped in with a goal. A new guy that was playing for them this year, number 11, Keenan. He seemed to cause them a lot of trouble as well. So, look, it was a really deflating defeat for Fermanagh. I suppose it's now out of their own hands. Louth are going to play Kildare. Kildare have nothing to play for. So you would think on paper, Louth are going to win that. And it means then Fermanagh against Cavan won't matter. Now, the only thing is, Fermanagh lads will be kicking themselves as Kildare happened to take a result against Louth, so they need to get back up to training tomorrow night and really, you know, make sure that they're ready to go against Cavan and try and get a result there for themselves.
Yeah, and I suppose, Ledge, you know, Louth, I watched Louth, Daniel, playing last year against Derry in Defay Park, and RDE actually went down and took the two girls down. They wanted to see sort of, Gallagher was actually over Derry at the time, and they wanted to see him in action, like along the lane and stuff. So we stood right behind the dugout. But I was mightily impressed with Louth that day, Daniel. I thought their defensive shape, they were so well organised. In fact, what actually got Derry over the line that day was a long ball into the square that was dropped by the goalkeeper, and it was a bundled home finish, and Derry ended up getting out of jail and winning by a point or two. But I would say Louth probably still have, Daniel, probably a lot of sort of mental memory from last year with Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin over the last years, because some serious, serious work, Daniel, went in there from an organisational perspective.
Yeah, I'd imagine so, and no need to reinvent the wheel either. Like, you can see it with Mickey Hart following on from what Gallagher has done as well. You know, it sort of players will have found something that worked, because prior to Mickey Hart coming in, Louth were a bit of a basket case. Like, you know, yes, lovely footballers when they were let play football, but missing that bit of defensive structure, that little bit of edge. But it's a big win for them. And look, RD is not an easy place to go at this time of year either. But yeah, I look, sometimes, and again, Ryan, you know more about the playing pool in Fermanagh, but if you're plugging out of the same 20 players for five league games in a row, you possibly hit a saturation point where it's very hard to get to that mental pitch consistently. Like, you know, and I've no real insight, so I'm kind of just assuming, but I know there was times with us and Carlo that a lot of similar players are playing the whole time, and you can get a day where you just hit a flat spot, and anything that can go wrong goes wrong, and the more you try, nearly the worse it gets, you know. But
that's interesting, Edge. That's interesting, right? I'm going to talk about that, Ryan and Daniel, right? I'm going to talk about pitching, because obviously coaches like to get an insight into sort of, you know, coaching aspects rather than just talking about the National League in general. Getting to the pitch of a game, I seen it last year, Ryan, in a club game, a club championship game. A team was involved in Mayo Bridge. Okay, we played Glen, who were a couple of divisions below us. They came in fully loaded, four or five county players, decent team. They weren't a Division 2 or Division 3 team on paper. But we came in with a lot of injuries, and the intensity that they brought, this is only club level, we just couldn't get to the pitch of the game. and ended up losing the game, right? And it was a bit of a shock. Obviously, it was a big shock for us, and it was a deflating defeat. But you could nearly just sense Daniel and Ryan. I could know after 10 minutes, we're not at the pitch here. Like, we are not at the pitch now. The warm-up was grand. The preparation was probably okay. Maybe we touched a complacency, hard to know. But like how, like, if you don't get to the pitch to the game, it's wild difficult, lads, to get to actually change that in play, isn't it? Like, wild difficult. Like.
Yeah, momentum, Stephen, like, is a big thing. And is that the deuce? Was that Glenn that you played last
That's
year?
Right. I
actually watched that game, and I know exactly what you're saying. You're probably just waiting for Mayo Bridge to click into gear and eventually kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck. It probably never happened because Glenn had just got themselves into a rhythm. So I think it was the same the weekend. Louth got a good start early on, and Fermanagh just, you were waiting for them probably to get themselves back into the game, and they couldn't. And once Louth had that momentum, they then they started playing for, you know, free flowing football. I suppose it's a lot of lads then will turn around and say maybe did we do something different in the warm up, or was it the travel? Like I know Fermanagh maybe met up at 10:30 that morning in Rosslea, so some boys from the far end of the county might have been on the road from 9:30. Game wasn't until 2:00. Normally them kind of journeys you might go down the night before. So they're all probably small things from a coaching point of view you maybe reflect on and say, okay, maybe were we better off travelling down? Like I know Mayo played Tyrone in a league game, which was a Saturday evening there a couple of weeks ago, and the Mayo boys came down on the Friday. And logistically, that mightn't work for lads that are working and stuff, but that just shows the preparation that they're putting in to their games. Yeah. So they came down on the Friday, probably met up in Castlebar at 12 o'clock, stayed in Enniskillen Friday night, done a wee loose session Friday evening, and then got on the road Saturday to head home.
Yeah. And Daniel, getting to the pitch, it's like if it's not there, it's very hard to claw it back in game.
Was it the 2018 All-Ireland final when Tyrone went 5-0 up on Dublin in the first 15 minutes? And I thought this, and this is, this takes like serious leadership and confidence in what you're doing. But after that first 15 or so minutes, Dublin dropped off every kick out. They came into a low block, went inside the 45, and basically turned the game into a shit show for about 15 minutes. And they managed to go in ahead at halftime in the end. That was Tyrone.
Scored 2-5 out of play.
Do you know? But nothing happened for 10 minutes. They just said, this is shutdown time. And I think that takes a really mature group of players to be able to say, because I know myself, sometimes you're thinking, especially when you're a favourite, you're thinking, we need to press a little bit higher. Maybe we need to try more stuff. And I thought that Dublin just gave a masterclass and actually trying to do nothing for a while and let Tyrone make mistakes, and they hit him on the counter a few times. But that takes a really mature group of players. And especially when you come down to the club level, like you've no idea what preparation is like going through the week, you know. It's and sometimes it can be really hard to, as Ryan said, momentum. Once you like, mistakes and turnovers can be a rot sometimes, and if one lad does it, all of a sudden it can spread through a team, you know. But it's I thought that particular day that was a really mature approach, I think, of a team that was very confident in their own ability. But like not many teams are like that Dublin team of that area.
Ryan, I used to say to Ledge and the boys there, and Ledge probably remember this, like Ledge, remember I used to say, like, you know, you need to be in the game to win the game. You know, you need to be in it to win it, you know, and we were looking at sort of breaking the game down into quarters, obviously before the water breaks and stuff like that came in, and there was actually, you know, strategically quarters. But we would have said, right, first 15, 16 minutes, if it's 2-2, 3-2, 1-1, who cares? Like, you know, as long as you're in the game, you know, gives you an up. But if you're 5-0 down, you're in big trouble. Like, you know, you're in big trouble. You're 6-2 down or 7-1 down. You know, and that ledge would have happened Carlo teams in the past, you know, and especially teams that are not maybe just at that level and can't pitch that level and just be in the game. And then, you know, the second half, obviously, you know, the game will open up and you can express yourself a wee bit more and play a bit more football. Just probably, Ryan, one of the things to say here is going back to Division 2, Armagh, mightily impressive win at the weekend. There's obviously a serious degree of coaching going on in Armagh. We've talked about this before. I'm not going to dwell on it because we did chat about them last week quite a bit. They've got McGeaney, they've got McKeever, they've got Kieran Donaghy, they've got Conath Gilligan. Really experienced men, you know, high calibre coaching there. They could be the real deal, Ryan, this year.
They could, and I noticed they didn't concede a goal at the weekend again. And did somebody say, are they the only team throughout the whole four divisions that haven't conceded a goal?
I could be wrong on that.
No, you're right.
They haven't conceded a goal. So here, boys, that's very impressive.
Six games. That's pretty good.
Armagh put 221 on Cavan. Like, regardless if Cavan weren't at the pitch of the game at all, put 221 on them. You know, at the end of the day, they were playing an Ulster opponent that probably know each other very well. They've played each other a lot down the years as well. So Look, maybe there are more dark horses, Stephen. As you said, they're finding their feet. They maybe looked at Division 2 and saying, look, we're going to come through the campaign probably easy enough. You said the first day they played Louth, they looked a wee bit off it. But maybe they're peaking for the championship. Yeah. And they're saying, look at what Dublin did last year, came out of Division 2, eventually then obviously ended up All-Ireland winners. So they could be dark horses. Everyone's talking about that Derry Donegal game in Ulster, that the winner's going to come from that. Armagh, let's face it, they're going to play Fermanagh in the first round. They'd be expecting to win that.
And they're going to play down
probably down or Antrim in the semi. Yeah. So they only have one really big performance, you would have to say, to win an Ulster title. And the way they're going at the moment, they're going to take a bit of stopping.
Like they'll obviously, there'll be no complacency there, Ledge, right? They'll look at Fermanagh. They've been beaten before by Fermanagh, Ryan. You probably played in that game. I remember Armagh came in flying. We actually played them, Ledge, a couple of weeks before they played Fermanagh because McGeady wanted to sort of, you know, replicate what way Fermanagh were going to be setting up very defensively that day. And like Fermanagh actually beat them like 12-8 or something, Ryan, in Brewster, wasn't
12-8
it?
Up in Enniskillen, yeah.
Yeah, 12-8 in Enniskillen. And you're sort of thinking to yourself, you know, them sort of performances were in Armagh, but I think that's sort of come out in a wee bit, Daniel. I think over the last couple of years, those scars that they've had, you know, obviously those one-point defeats, there's massive learning from them, Lich. Massive.
Yeah, and as you say, history has kind of, I'd say, taught a lot of teams in Ulster. You can't really take the eye off the ball with anyone, really. You know what I mean? It's there's never any majorly handy games. Like, you like look at maybe Dublin, Kerry could, you know, could probably significantly take the eye off the ball in an early round, and it mightn't matter, but you could very conceivably get caught because there, no matter who you're playing in Ulster at this stage, you're going to be playing against a structure one way or the other, and with a nice little level of aggression and intensity. So you probably can't afford to, but I think it's an interesting one. You can sort of see teams starting to ramp up a small little bit now as we're getting a little bit closer to the championship.
Yeah.
I thought there was a significant upping with some teams that had looked, oh, that's that, like, I felt it was a little bit more championship pace, you know, whereas maybe the first couple of rounds have been a little bit hit and miss. But I thought some teams really looked like they were starting to prime in. And I think Armagh are one of those. Like, as you say, what is it, 221? Like, that's phenomenal shooting, you know. It's probably a good way for Armagh kind of to come to the end of their campaign. You know, they'll obviously themselves and Donegal more than likely be in a Division 2 final now. And that'll be a priming game for them.
Just to let the viewers know, go on ahead there, Ryan.
Sorry, the one thing I've observed about Armagh is Ryan O'Neill obviously hasn't really played any National League at all. And down maybe the last year or two, you would have said if Armagh had to get over the line in a big game, they needed a massive performance from Ryan O'Neill. Like, there at the weekend, I'm just looking, Ryan O'Neill only came on after 56 minutes. The game was probably well over at that point. Instead, Connaughty scoring 4 points, Murnan obviously chips in at 2, Turbot 1-4, Grugan 5 points, Stephen Campbell. So is McGeaney maybe, like, is Ryan O'Neill going to feature? Like, when's he actually going to decide to put him in? Because
Are they tapering then? And this is the point I was going to say. That's the point I was going to say to you, actually. You know, they could be tapering for, as you say, Ryan, you know, obviously, look, promotion was an absolute, you know, it was a given. They had to get promoted. Obviously, playing Division 1 football is going to bring a group on. But you're looking at an Ulster Championship, for example, Ledge and Ryan, right? You talked about their route to the final. Nearly like Dublin, Daniel. Like, Dublin could go and periodise their Championship schedule. You know, so periodisation into their training, they can say, right, we're going to peak for, you know, we're not going to peak for July because we're going to win Leinster training during a heavy block. But what we're going to do is we're going to peak for early August. You know, and surely Armagh now, once they come out of this National League, they can get a heavy bit of work done and knowing probably that they have enough to get over the line, you know, albeit now down are actually going quite well. It won't be easy beat. But, you know, that's a big advantage too, being on that side of the draw. Huge advantage.
Definitely,
I think if I was Armagh at the moment, I would be really practicing. The one little flaw we've seen, and we saw them up close and personal, was when they're playing that structured defence. And I think the next 4 or 5 weeks, the Donegal game would be a perfect kind of starter game for it. But they need to be working on breaking down 14, 15 men in structured defence. I think that's what would probably be the difference for them this year, because I think they struggle with it a small bit. I think they get a little bit impatient sometimes. And if I was McGeaney now, I'd be rallying that for the next 3 or 4 weeks consistently.
Yeah,
in matches against even overload your defense, give them 2 extra defenders where they're having to be patient, having to work those little scoring opportunities, because I think that's probably the one little flaw they have sometimes.
Yeah, and Ryan, this is an interesting one. You know, Jim McGuinness back at Croke Park now with Donegal in a national final. Both managers will be very, very keen to get silver on the table.
Of course, they will. No doubt about that. And it'll be a cracking game. It'll be interesting to see now.
Yeah.
What way Donegal will play once they get into a big pitch in Croke Park. We know Armagh can bring a kicking game anyway. You know, they probably prefer that style of game. So Croke Park, I think, will actually suit Armagh. It'll be to see if Donegal is able to transfer it across. So I would probably still have Armagh slight favourites. I think they've been, apart from maybe that first game against Louth, I think they've been more convincing in all their victories throughout the National League. Donegal ended up getting over Kildare at the weekend, but it was 8-6 at half time, and even Louth last week gave them a bit of a game till maybe the last 5 or 10 minutes. So you're talking about periodization. McGuinness has probably done a lot of running and hard running pre-season with the Donegal boys, and I noticed they still haven't got all their best players out on the pitch. Maybe they overloaded them. Maybe it's a case of lads were picking up injuries, like Big McGee in the middle of the pitch hasn't really featured much. So I feel Armagh have a more settled team at this point compared to what Donegal have.
And funny you talk about injuries. I've seen Jack O'Connor during the week talking about hamstring injuries. He's never come across as many hamstring injuries, and maybe there's just a significant reason for that. Maybe the time of the year, how heavy pitches are. Daniel, you talked about the block of games that come, you know, so consistently at such an early stage in the year. So, you know, that's maybe a factor. Ryan, it leads me in nicely to Division One, Derry and Dublin. You know, Dublin lost their first two games. Obviously, lost the first night out, Daniel, to Monaghan. A patched up Dublin team, a very nearly like a second string Dublin team. The following week they went to Mayo, and you could actually see Desi just, there was a tad I felt that night, but of real frustration, and maybe the first signs a little bit of pressure when they lost away to Mayo by a point. And I could just see his face at the end of the game. You know, he was raging that the ref had blown the game so early, and he's probably thinking the draw would have been good. But the bounce back, Daniel, with 4 wins in a row, playing really good football, kicking his back for me. I think what you have to do, Ryan, you talked about it as well, because Croke Park plays so fast. I don't think a running game alone will win you the All-Ireland. And I think Dublin, and I've said this before, I talk about the double kick, so that the short kick out, the bunch, but the second part of the bunch, they retain nearly a spine the whole way up the field, if you get me. It's a kick out into space, it's a kick to the middle third, and it's another pop pass. But you're not talking about fancy kicks. You're talking, Daniel, about 25, 30-meter punt passes just down the channel. And all of a sudden, they've gone with two passes into the opposition's half, and they're playing ball in their half then, you know. And I just think they're probably the best team in the country at the minute with the flexibility in their game, Daniel.
I would put, not all of it, but some of it. I think Brian Howard coming back into that squad, into that team, has added a really nice control to their play that sometimes I think they can miss a little bit. He's constantly playing that anchor role behind what's happening. He's the safety net for them if turnovers come. But his array of passing, he is obviously a big, strong fella and everything else, but like he has lovely, lovely skills. And as you say, it's never anything too flash. It's inside of the boot, one bounce and chest a lot of the time. I think he's a really nice addition for them there. But Dublin have like very clearly since day one have got better week on week, I think. I like even with a significantly changed team in Salt Hill at the weekend, they were far too good for Galway. Now, I know Galway are missing a handful, but like there's an awful lot of transition in that Dublin team, and to rack up 22 points in a fairly miserable sort of a day in Salt Hill is very good scoring. Like, it's funny, I think the league standings in general are a fairly good representation of who's where at the moment. Like, you know, I think that's where it's at. But in general, I think Dublin are moving in the right direction, and we're always fairly critical of Dublin here. We'd be picking anything we could, and I think they're playing lovely football at the moment.
Yeah, well, they've scored 121 points, Ryan. They've averaged about 20 points a game, and that's including two defeats in the first two games. So they've been shown a great degree of flexibility. But one thing probably that impressed me was that night against Derry, how efficient they were, Ryan, in breaking down that sort of structured defence. Like, they were really good. And you could actually see old elements of Jim's Dublin, you know, where turnovers were non-existent. Like, we used to see, boys, more turnovers in Desi's couple of years probably in some games than there would have been in Jim's six, you know, and in 6 years. Like, and that's obviously, I think, been tidied up. Now, I still think there's certain players that maybe just aren't at the level of that Dublin six in a row side, Ryan, but certainly the flexibility in their play is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think, Stephen, the big one that you talked there about the kick, the double kick, I feel like Dublin, with Brian Howard, as Dan mentioned, they're floating around that defence. He's a brilliant kick passer of the ball, so if they get the kick out away short to him, a lot of the time he's looking up to see if he can get a 30-yard, 35-yard kick pass into maybe like a Fenton or a Kilkenny coming, you know, into that pocket of space down the channel. And I feel Dublin have a plan. Once they win the short kick out, they have a plan to go forward. While a lot of other teams, I think, probably, you know, maybe lower level teams are saying they've a plan to win the kick out, but then they've no plan of what they're doing there. A lot of the time you see it's one pass to a cornerback and then back to the goalkeeper. And then it's like, okay, you know, fill the shape from here. Well, Dublin, very, very seldom do they play the ball back to Cluxton unless they definitely have to. Like, Cluxton doesn't really join the play as much as a a lot of other goalkeepers now, even like I'm looking at Fermanagh, a lot of their game plan is around get the kick out the way short, one fist pass, and then eventually get it back to the goalkeeper. But it's very easy for the opposition just to set up, you know, and they've everybody behind the ball. Dublin, for me, do it better than anybody else. They get it away, and then all of a sudden they look for another kick pass straight away. So it also cuts out the high squeeze. You know, if a team has tried to high squeeze them and they get the ball away, get it away again, all of a sudden, six on six in the top half of the pitch. Yeah.
It helps when you've got King Kong up front on you know, and the beast of him. I thought he was, at times, he was brilliant on Saturday. Really impressive. There's one time, I think he won a ball. Do you remember the long ball in from Scully? And he sort of won it out of nowhere, and he just turned on a sixpence, you know, and clipped it over the bar with a fist. But Daniel, that's interesting from Ryan there. From a coaching perspective, like, coaching a kick out is grand. Everyone can do that. There's loads of little ideas. There's loads of little, like, wee bit of screening, bunching breaks, overloads, you know, the whole lot. Like, there's so many different variations now. And you know, you can see it very clearly at inter-county level, especially if you watch the top teams. You can actually get kick-out ideas from it. But that is the hard part of coaching, lads, is actually coaching the development of the kick then. Yeah. You know, the second phase of it.
It often becomes the kick-out becomes the whole thing, as Ryan alluded to. And it's ultimately what are kick-outs either side of the ball. So when you're trying to defend a kick-out, whether it's a press, man-to-man, whatever you're doing, you're ultimately trying to get the ball back to create a scoring chance at that half of the field. And likewise, when you're trying to get the ball from a kick-out, it's to create a scoring chance. So like you have to be thinking about that next step consistently. Now, what I will caveat Dublin with, like, when you, as we mentioned, when you have some of the ball winners they have, you can give half 50-50s to those lads, and they're probably going to come out on the right side of it, you know. So a lot of it is because of obviously the quality they have. Like, you know, you could come down to your local club side, you could get your first kick out, put a 60-yard ball down to the sideline. You might lose 10 out of 10. But again, that comes back, that's your coaching piece, where you have to understand what you have and who you have and what the skill set of those players are. But it's a really good point about the development of your kick-out strategy to retain the ball, or your kick-out press. Ultimately, they're both scoring opportunities, and that can't be lost in the narrative of you have to stand in this spot and run to there. It's, as you say, it's the second level is the real tough bit, you know?
And the high level of game intelligence, like you know, Dublin, for me, I would say, Ryan, when Dublin's getting pressed, so if someone's pressing Comerford or... Is it O'Hanlon was in net, Daniel? Was it O'Hanlon?
At the weekend, it was Comerford.
Comerford's net the weekend, but O'Hanlon has been in, hasn't he? So say a team's pressing O'Hanlon, or a team's pressing Comerford or Cluxton, I would say they'll dictate what their kick-out's going to be depending on what the opposition are doing. You know, so if the opposition are going with a high press, they're thinking, you know what, we're going to get somewhere in the middle third here, we're going to punish them. And then if an opposition's dropping off, right, we're going to get the kick-out away short, but our next one's going to be a kick pass. You know, they'll nearly decide on the field, you know, what the opposition are doing will dictate what they're going to do. You know, and that's a high level of game intelligence, mate. High level, Ryan.
It is, and do you know what? It probably makes, from a coach's point of view, it makes it easy if you've got players there that they understand, you know, what the opposition are trying to do to them, and they nearly work it out for themselves. So it means that you're not telling them every single play what they must do. They, you know, they get a feel for it. Just Dublin, like, if you look at it, Stephen, all the top teams now that are probably going to be competing, they're all putting up big scores, regardless of what they're facing, whether it be a low block or whatever. Dublin scored 22 points. Tyrone are scoring 119. We mentioned Armagh, 221. You know, these big teams, they're able to hit them scores, and I feel that's the difference between the Kerry always score highly, 117 as well. Derry scored 315 down in Castlebar. I think the lesser teams are going to have to realise now that we need to get more scores on the board. And how do we develop? One part of that development is, if we get a kick out away short, how are we going to try, as Dan mentioned, get a score as quick as possible? It's not just a case of retaining possession anymore.
So what's the magic number? What do you think's the magic number? 18, 20, between 18, 20 points? What's the magic number? It's 20 points. 20 points probably to win in All-Ireland, yeah?
And Andy Moore, I remember Andy Moore saying this just after he retired, you need 20 points to win All-Ireland final. That was his, to beat that Dublin team. So I think that's, but that's like easier said than done, isn't it?
Donegal were the last team to beat them before the six in a row. They scored 314, so 20, you know, three goals, obviously. Like, but as you said, 20 points, but obviously to beat Dublin, to beat the top teams, if you're a lesser league, you're going to need goals. That's the reality. You're going to need goals. Derry, Ryan, another wild, impressive win. I know Ledge wants to chat a wee bit about Mayo structuring this, but from a Derry perspective, Ryan, the best coach team in the country, like, there's no question about it, and have been over the last number of years. I know we sound like a broken record every week, but you know, the superlatives can't really, you know, stop for them, because I just think they're a really, really slick machine. You know, I think they've got a wild level of experience now as well. And I think having lost last year in a game they should have won against Kerry, like, they will have their bit between the teeth this year to go the whole way. And seeing them at top of Division One here heading to a league final, because they will beat Roscommon on the last day, it's a serious start for them.
Yeah, they are, Stephen. We've obviously said this. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be there. They're going to be competing for All Ireland. Now, in saying that, Donegal might have something got to say about the Ulster Championship. They're probably thinking that they can come in quietly and catch them. Mm-hmm. But in most people's eyes, Derry are the dominant force in Ulster. They've developed probably, if you think of the first one or two years under Rory, they probably struggled to get the real high score, and they were looking to probably battle it out and beat you maybe 13-10. Now they're whacking on massive scores, and as you said,
10 goals, right? 10 goals, right?
10 goals. They have goals.
They
have a killer instinct for goals. That's one thing about them. You know, you might think it's a simple tap over a point, and all of a sudden they'll throw a solo dummy and slip it inside. And they definitely, if they get inside you at all, they get a lot of runners ahead of the ball, and the likes of, you know, Paul Doherty. Or Paul Cassidy, Ethan Doherty on the wings, them guys are excellent at getting ahead of the ball and then creating goal chances. So they probably realise, Stephen, as well, if they're going to beat Dublin down the line, and they're going to need goals. Like last year, you talked about what was the score in the All-Ireland final. Dublin scored 115. So again, that 20-point mark that we mentioned is probably going to be required. It's very hard to score 20 points in Dublin. So if you can whack in 3-10, 3-11, that's probably what's going to take to beat them.
Yeah, and 10 goals. Down have scored 11. They're the only team that have actually scored more than now. Louth have 12, but that was a bit false at the weekend, having scored 6. So, you know, you could take that away. But it goes to show that they are, you know, creating those goal scoring opportunities. But Ledge, like, Mayo, like, look, for me, I don't think they can win in All-Ireland, because I just don't know if they can defend, Daniel.
Yeah, and they're not exactly shooting the lights out either, the other side of it, you know, which has been a traditional Achilles heel. Like, it's now, in fairness, I'll caveat the performance of the weekend in saying that Derry are one of the best teams at breaking down any kind of defence, to be fair to them. Like, and I was watching, and a couple of times you'd pause just to see what's after happening, and you could see all the Derry attacking players, their body shapes are all pointed towards the black spot nearly. Their runs are from out to in, and it is hard to track, but I just thought Mayo, and look, for the first couple of rounds, we were saying, look, it's early doors. We can only judge what we've seen. But I think a trend that has been coming up is Mayo's defensive shape. Like, they're sort of playing with this horseshoe of men that are kind of half man-to-man, and then they're half man-to-man out in the middle third as well. And there's just this ocean in behind. One breach of that defensive line, it's a goal chance. Like, I thought in the first half, every time Derry attacked, I was like, this is quite possibly a goal. You know, like, Niall Loughlin could have, he got one, should have had another one on a plate. I think it was the Shane McGuigan coming into the back post. The defending from McGuigan's goal, like, I mean, like, look, we can talk about teams holding things back for championship and all the rest, but there's basic defensive principles that every team should be doing in every game. And there was three Mayo defenders, all converged to a ball carrier, popped over the head, and McGuigan slots it away. Like, the first thing you're taught in under 10s is if you're a 2-on-1, keep dropping and concede the point, worst case scenario. Like, with really basic defensive errors. And that would significantly worry me if I was Kevin McStay, because we saw it in the first half down in Kerry, where they gave Clifford the full 45 basically to work in. Now, Kerry weren't sharp enough to really take advantage, but it was high risk stuff. Like, and any team that ever comes at Mayo with a strong running game, running from angles, running from deep, Mayo struggle with it. If it's 50-50 ball kicked in, like, there's some really good defenders and one-on-one battles and all the rest of it, but you can't defend 4v2. And there was one that Peter Hanavan highlighted on the Sunday game last night, and it was the point Conor Glass got after Mayo kind of, out of pure madness, got themselves back in the game. And do you remember the score that Derry kept it from about the 63rd minute to their 61st right. minute to 64th? Yeah. And Conor Glass found himself on the end of it. Like, that was a really important score, because Mayo got another one that had energy and all the rest of it. But Aidan O'Shea was tagging Conor Glass in the middle of the field, ignoring the play. And like, okay, fair enough, whatever. And then all Glass had to do was one little sidestep. He was away, and he was the one that finished the score. And O'Shea got lost ball follow. And that is the danger of this whole man-to-man thing, that all it takes is one breach and everything else falls. And especially around the middle third, where midfielders, and Ryan, no offense intended, but like, not really marking would be the forte. Like, you know, you naturally get sucked to danger. Like, that's what defenders should do. That's what most players do. They go to where the danger should be. Whereas I feel Mayo are so concerned with, well, I have my man, even if he's on the sideline, not doing anything, I'm out here with him. And it just made them so porous.
Yeah. No, and so Ryan,
Dan, what you said there is 100%. I agree 100%. I think Mayo feel that they play their best game once it's just chaotic. It's nearly man to man. They're not comfortable playing that defensive shape. And as you said, man to man, probably, you know, it's too risky once you come up against the better teams. But Mayo, that's their style. They want to go down to Castlebar. They want to make it, you know, chaotic. It's all up and down. And at times, Derry just looked like they could rip them apart, you know. And they did that, obviously. They scored 3 goals. Lachlan was maybe pulled down for a potential penalty in the first half as well. So the other thing I would say, Stephen, is we talked about Derry. They're a seasoned team now. They know exactly. They know each other inside out. It's a lot of the same players have been around there now for 4 or 5 years. I look at that Mayo team and there's a lot of new players in, you know. So I just feel Mayo are not at the level to challenge for an All-Ireland at all. They've got too many young players coming in. They still probably have a bit of learning.
A wee bit of worry for me at the start of the year, lads, as well, was when, you know, Kevin's brother, obviously Liam McHale, stepped away from the management team and then came out publicly and sort of said, you know, he didn't feel that his opinions were sort of, you know, matching the opinions of the rest of the management team. And you're sort of thinking, well, McHale obviously wanted to go in and maybe play a bit more defensive edge, you know, and maybe the rest of them are thinking, no, that's not the way we're going to play. We're going to put our own stamp on it and stuff. So that was a warning sign for me at the start of the year, Daniel. I thought that was a bit strange, you know.
And it's not as if, like, being more defensive or defending properly. I mean, you can defend properly with 11 players and leave 4 up if it's coached correctly. Yeah. It doesn't have to be wild 14 men back. Like, I mean, Mayo have incredibly good athletes, like they do. It's not as if they're really soft in one-on-one scenarios that they'll get bet in a tackle situation. Like, they're big, strong lads who are extremely athletic. They just, as far as I can see, just need to be properly coached on how to defend. And like, again, I talk about Aidan O'Shea, and we talked about cornerbacks and this coming back. He gets picked out an awful lot, or corner forwards coming back. He gets picked out an awful lot in one-on-one scenarios because he finds himself exposed because there's no structure. Whereas I think there's mixed messaging. It doesn't look like there's a clarity about what they're doing. And I think
that's another management team. When it was announced, you know, everyone was like, whoa, you know, star-studded Donny Buckley, Stephen Rochford, you know. And maybe sometimes, Ryan, you can have too many big coaching personalities. Maybe you can.
Yeah, well, Buckley's well-renowned to be a brilliant defensive coach, I believe. Rochford, obviously, you know, had managed, been up with Donegal. So as you say, Stephen, they're probably splitting the sessions, I would guess. Rochford does a bit, Buckley does a bit. While you look at Derry, Horst Devlin will be doing everything.
Everything.
I would say.
Everything,
You know, it's the same message. I'm not saying that there will be mixed messages between Rochford and Buckley. I'm sure they communicate, but at least Horst Devlin, everything is probably from him, and Mickey just lets him at it. Yeah. He does all the management. Yeah. Horst does all the training, mm-hmm. the setups, etc. So it's probably, it's a good point as well.
Yeah, and speaking of Horst Devlin, I suppose, going on to Tyrone, you love this one, Ledge. You know, they need a cause. Tyrone need a backs to the wall job, don't they, to bring out the best of them. And they were fiery on Saturday night. And I thought that a bit more sort of steel about them. And McGeary sort of dropped back from 15 and played a bit of a sweeping role as well. And obviously that gave them that wee bit of defensive stability, you know, and turned Monaghan over a lot of times. Like, but we on a separate note though, I thought that Tyrone obviously. It was a massive win for them, but then you've seen that sort of flip side of Monaghan, where that madness, Daniel, towards the end from Monaghan.
Yeah, and I thought a very nice kind of accompaniment to McCurry and Canavan was Colin McShane being floating back in around there. He gave them a nice pivot and a bit of structure and a bit of grunt up front, like, because for all Canavan's been getting awful hardship this league, having to be the dirty ball winner and the finisher as well. Do you know what I mean? Now he's well able to do it, but I thought McShane being kind of floating back in there was nice. But like, equally, Monaghan probably had chances that they probably regret when it came to it. Now, in saying all that, I thought Tyrone were the better team in general. But I just feel that they're always best when there's a bit of grit and a bit of edge to them. And they brought that, especially in the first half. I thought they were very impressive. And look, it's been all over social media, but like the Canavan goal was just...
Yeah. Well, just on the Canavan goal, like, Niall Morgan, Niall Morgan ran the outside of the foot pass, 50, 60 yards, you know, over the top to see, and he seen it. He did see the pass. Like, it wasn't just a hit and hope. Like, and again, we go back to kicking, you know, that ability to kick the ball. If you've got that flexibility in your game, and that is something obviously Duher and Fergal Logan, you know, obviously would have tried to bring into Tyrone when they first came in, because Mickey's game was probably a lot of through the hands, you know, there was very little kicking, you know, inside forwards were probably made redundant. You know, it was a hard running game, but they obviously have tried to incorporate that into their game. Like, but Niall's a tremendous kicker of the ball, like, tremendous kick pass of the ball.
100%, and probably Stephen, 9 times out of 10, most other players, when they get that ball, will just play it safe. And you know, they'll tell everybody to fill the shape, or else they'll put the hand up and they'll say, let's slow it down here, let's, you know, take 10, 20 seconds to reset. But kicking, like, it's worth the risk, because even if it doesn't come off, you know, they're still set up in a defensive position. But for me, Canavan, like, his performances went to another level compared to last year. And, you know, I feel if Tyrone are in the latter stages of learning, I think Canavan's a contender for player of the year. I think he's that good at the moment, and he's getting better all the time. He's physically, I feel he's got a lot stronger now. He's never going to be massive, but you can see he's able to bounce off boys and, you know, get McCurry back up to it. McSheehan can be a handful when he's on it. You don't know what he's going to do. He's no longer probably the main man, so there's not going to be the same focus on him. So, look, Tyrone, as you said, I just feel they're still at times a wee bit loose. Mm-hmm. They let teams in for scores too easy. But I think they're going to progress nicely. And I'm not too sure who they've actually got in the Ulster Championship, but...
The one thing about Tyrone, though, is that... One thing about Canavan is he sort of plays with a bit of a smirk on his face too, Ledge. You know, he's got that wee sort of cheeky grin, cheeky smile. Like, he's enjoying his football. You know, he's really enjoying his football.
I saw the behind the goal view from his goal, and he actually encourages Morgan to kick, because he was actually in a defensive sort of a spot in between the 45 and 65. And when he saw the turn, he just took off. It was his reaction. It was nearly before Morgan actually kept the ball in. He was nearly gone. Yeah. You know, he thinks so quickly. Obviously, didn't lick it off the stone, like, but his reactions were so fast, and then the execution of the pass as well. But it goes back to us talking about how sometimes strength and conditioning can take time. You know, that he's obviously been doing it now since whatever, under 14s or that, but he's really starting to see the benefits of it. He was definitely thrown around a bit in his first year, I thought, like, but he's a hardy little buck now, and he's, as you say, he's kind of gone around with that swagger and a bit of a smirk, and he knows he's well able to give it if he had to. Like, I mean, he down in Killarney when they played Kerry, I mean, he won a turnover over in the corner from a short kick out. Like, you know, he's a hardy bit of stuff that has both sides to his game, and I think he's been excellent so far for a Tyrone team that haven't exactly been firing on all cylinders. You know,
as a man would have said to me before, he didn't lick it in the street, you know.
exactly.
You know, he didn't lick it in the street. But no, interest now, I think Roscommon and Monaghan gone, Ryan, you know, without sounding patronising to them, like, you know, a serious, serious sustained effort for Monaghan over the last, you know, number of years to really retain that Division 1 status, like, and nearly pulled it off again, like, but that'll be a blow to them, Ryan. That'll be a blow to them.
Yeah, it will, Stephen, but I would say that they'd be confident coming straight back up. Yeah. You know, Monaghan are very competitive. Yeah. Did they get to the All-Ireland under-20s last year? That's right, against Derry?
And next year around, probably an opportunity to bleed those lads, you know, at a lower level, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and when Vinnie Corey took that job, nobody really wanted it. They couldn't get a manager for a long time. So, look, Monaghan will bounce back. It'll not take too much out of them.
Yeah. Division 3, Ledge, you're sort of wee adopted county there. You have a wee soft spot for Clare, don't you? You spend a lot of time in Clare. Up to Newry next week by looking to ruin Down's promotion party. Listen, look, as good as Down have been, you did call it early in the show, Ledge. You thought that Clare were surpassing expectations, maybe, you know, and you did pick them out early in one of the earlier rounds to say that they were doing a group. But, like, as good as Down have been, Westmeath should beat Sligo, which will promote them. But now Down are getting into a game on the last day, thinking that maybe, I would say, even the likes of Marty Clark, they want to trial him in goals. I was thinking maybe at that stage we're already promoted, that dead rubber in the last day, we can give him a full game in goals, see what he's like. But now there's a bit of pressure in that game, Mitch. There's a wee bit of pressure on it.
Big time. And
no pressure, Clare. No pressure.
No. You know? But they've already surpassed. I'd say any expectation Clare had at the start of it would have been just to stay in three, you know. And in fairness, they would actually be in the promotion hunt. Like, they would, sorry, they already are, but they would be at the forefront of it if that goal hadn't been disallowed up in Westmeath. Like, they would have won them the game, and that was brute. Like, it was disgraceful.
Yeah. Have you been chatting to Tubberly?
I've been talking to him on and off, yeah. Like, I mean, they're surprised with how it's going, but by all accounts, the management setup they have at the moment is quite in tune and kind of know how to set a team up and haven't tried to reinvent everything that Colin Collins had left in place, you know, because like we played them a good few times, and Ryan, I'm sure you came across them a few times. They were, even though they were a Munster team, like they were really well organized. And Mark would have been talking about to us before, but when they knew they had to play a block, they were well able to do it. And the one thing I'll say about Clare football is there's no ego there. Like, I mean, they'll swallow any kind of pride or ego about doing X, Y, or Z just to get a result. And I would be very nervous if I was Conor Laverty for this weekend, because they'll know what they'll be facing, which will be it will be a low enough block, it'll be a fair level of intensity, and it's going to be a scrap, you know. And I tell you what, I don't know, it'd be hard to call it, like, and there's pressure on down, you know. That,
yeah, like, there's a wee touch of pressure. The one thing I'll say there, like, without taking anything away from Down, Clare, or Westmeath, Ryan, it's a very poor standard Division 3 this year. Like, I was watching a couple of the games. Like, I seen Limerick, they've obviously lost. I think it was 13 players, Billy Lee was telling me. 13 players. Clare have obviously lost a lot of players. Wicklow have struggled badly. Antrim didn't surprise me. I didn't get the hype about Antrim last year at all. They only won 2 games in Division 3 and should have been relegated. You know, Sligo came up as well from 4. You know, Tony's a man-to-man man, sort of, you know, the way he likes to play football. Awfully, you could possibly make a case that maybe Offaly, you know, are going to bring through some of these lads that were involved in that under 21 team, you know, that won all around. But it has been a poor 3, Ryan.
It has, Stephen. And probably, how many players did Clare lose? Did we say lads? Did they lose?
Double figures.
Like, they got relegated, which was a blow, and then they lost Colm Collins. Let's face it, who's been there for a lifetime with them, and then they lost 12 players. So for Clare to be still up there with a chance of getting promotion probably just shows you, as you said, Stephen, the standard Division 3 was poor this year. And you know what? I think they'll give Down, like, the one team Down probably don't want to meet was them, because they aren't afraid, as Dan said, to set up defensive, understand what Down's strengths are, and say, look, we're going to make it a dogfight here. And they're definitely a team. Anytime we've played them, there is no egos. They completely play for each other, and they'll have full belief. Like, they get a result, and that's all they need to do, regardless of the scoreline.
Yeah. Down unbeaten this year in Newry, including McKenna Cup games as well. They're going well. A lot of pace in their team. You know, pace is just, it's a priceless commodity, Daniel, in the modern
world. And I think from a coaching point of view, Clare will look to limit the amount of space those lads have to run into, you know. So it's all well and good having space, but if you're running into 13 men fairly regularly, you know, I think Down and the Down public will need to be ready for a fairly slow, methodical kind of game outside of set piece. So if Clare do press kickouts, that'll be the time for a bit of zoom from Down. I'd imagine Clare will drop off an awful lot. I'd say there will be, like, if Down don't buy into keeping the ball for periods of time, and look, it's not going to be pretty, but if they try to force the issue a little bit much, Clare will live off turnovers and counterattacks. So it's going to take a lot of patience, I'd say, and I don't know what the Down public are like, Stephen. Will they have much patience for an old 8-6 job? I don't know. But
she said, "Well, look here, listen. If you get over the line, I'd say they'd be happy enough." But an interesting one, just that where our old mate Dorney there dug out a 9-8 win. We talked about 20 points being the magical number. Jesus, the score combined wouldn't have got you 20. But I tell you what it's done, Ryan. I tell you what it's done, to be fair to them. It's give them a chance on the last day. If they beat Antrim, they stay up, you know, which is mad. Like, it's mad. But you know, because Wicklow have been obviously been very, very poor this year. I know Mark was obviously devastated with the loss of Jackson to the NFL, but he could be back maybe for that last game. I don't know. I don't know what the situation is, if he's home or not. Like, but certainly Antrim will be quite concerned too now, knowing that, you know, the pressure's on them in Corrigan Park against a Wicklow team who 100% will be organised with Mark there. Like, they'll be organised. Like.
Yeah, they will. And Wicklow, they're always dogged as well. I suppose it'll be a massive blow if Antrim lose that game.
Yeah,
huge. Because Mark McEntee came in there last year, and probably initially there was a lot of energy around the place. And, you know, obviously McEntee coming from Heath, he was pretty successful. Antrim people are getting excited. Two narrow defeats they probably thought hard done by, but they definitely haven't kicked on this year. So for the fact that they're still in the relegation battle, going down to the last game, you know, Antrim sometimes can be a bit volatile, and players maybe not getting game time, and all of a sudden the camp can be a bit up and down. Well, I've no doubt Wicklow will say, look, one shot at it here, boys, and It's in our own hands, really. If they get the win, that's them safe, isn't that it?
Yeah, it is, because Offaly are at home to Limerick, and Offaly will beat Limerick. Do you know? So that'll put Offaly in five. Wicklow and Antrim will both be in four. Now, Wicklow have a much worser score difference. It'll be minus 45 to Antrim's minus 15. But in the head-to-head rule, they stay up.
Yeah.
You know, so they know going to Belfast next week, a win is enough. Les, Division 4, your Earl County blew it at the weekend. Big opportunity there for promotion. A log for a team who probably hadn't been going overly well. And I do feel Daniel Longford are maybe a bogey side for Carlow. Like, they seem to be, the recording in Longford be poor.
It wouldn't be hectic at all. And I don't know. I mean, when you like, maybe the win against Tipperary at the start of the year, the win against Waterford maybe created a bit of a false sort of economy of where Carlow are probably. When you look at it now, I mean, both Waterford and Tipperary have had fairly disastrous years, and we're just sitting on top of that. Like, so it's very hard to know. Leagues don't lie. Leagues tend not to lie. And if you're promoted or relegated, you probably deserve it. It's 99% of the time you are where you are for a reason. So, and Carlow struggled with that consistency. And as we kind of touched on before, they'll struggle with ball winners, struggle on their own kick out an awful lot. Just missing that little bit of size. They're still a bit young and probably lacking a couple of fairly hefty midfielders, do a bit of dog work. Four is going to be a wild shootout.
I'm just
going to
say that. Just looking at it here, that's what I'm looking at here right now. Wexford at home to Longford, obviously, in the last day. Leitrim at home to Tip. Leitrim should beat Tip, Ryan. How did Leitrim do against Wexford in the head-to-head?
Leitrim beat Wexford with that penalty decision, you remember, at the very end?
Yes, that's interesting. So that's interesting. That could have insane promotion, you know.
Yeah, because I think Longford will be doing very well to go down to Wexford Park and get a result down there.
Yeah.
Like, Wexford, I think, are a very good team. The only game they lost was that game against Leitrim, where it was a controversial penalty, and I think Laois beat them. But apart from that, like, they give Tip a bit of a hiding at the weekend. So I think Longford will be doing very well to go down there and beat them, which means Leitrim just have to beat Tipperary, who have nothing to play for, and that should be enough to see them up.
And Laois are back in Division 3, Daniel. Having gone to two under John Sugar, they sort of slid back again to four. Justin McNulty, suppose the promotion will soften the blow of the helicopter from Stormont down to the Wexford Park that day. So it'll soften the blow financially anyway. But listen, Laois are back in three. Some good footballers in Laois, Ledge. You know,
look, they've been hit fairly hard with lads leaving and a couple of lads gone to Australia as well. And I'd say probably a bit of a surprise that they've gone back up so smoothly. Like, I mean, it's been plain sailing enough for them, more or less, you know, obviously, like, last week aside. But it's reflective probably of where that 3-4 is at the moment. Like, if you're in any way consistent at all and have a bit of structure about you, you'll definitely either stay in three or get out of four, you know. It, you know what it is? All teams are pretty much in around the same level, and that's what we want to see ultimately. You want to see teams kind of three and four teams going into the last day with a shot of getting up, which is brilliant. Like, but I'd say a bit of a surprise for Laois, and probably now the next thing for them is trying to stay in three next year again and be consistent, because they'd have always considered themselves much better than four or even three, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, lads, thanks a million. You know, as always, great insight. And hopefully this time next week, we'll be back to find out the ins and outs of who's been promoted, who's been relegated. There's still a couple of wee things up for grabs, I suppose. Probably Division 3 promotion in Division 3. There's obviously a big game down in Clare. I see TG Carr have got their hands on that, the A player. You know, and then obviously who's gonna make the league final along with Derry? Will it be Kerry or Dublin? Now that Tyrone are safe, you would probably expect that to be Dublin. But listen, lads, thanks a million. And I'll chat to you next week, man. Thank you.
Thanks, lads.
See you, lads.
See you later.
Cheers.